Why is Mathnasium one of the world's fastest growing franchises? Because demand for after-school math help is skyrocketing, making it an exceptional financial opportunity with the power to change lives. That's also why Mathnasium is consistently recognized as the number one math-only education franchise. With over 1,100 centers worldwide, Mathnasium is the trusted brand in math education, helping students build confidence and develop a love for math. Protected territories are available. Get your free franchise information kit at mathnasiumfranchise.com. That's mathnasiumfranchise.com.
So, what's it like to buy your first cryptocurrency on Kraken? Well, let's say I'm at a food truck I've never tried before. Am I going to go all in on the loaded taco? No siree. I'm keeping it simple, starting small. That's trading on Kraken. Pick from over 190 assets and start with a 10 quid in your pocket. Easy. Go to kraken.com and see what crypto can be. Don't invest unless you're prepared to lose all the money you invest. This is a high-risk investment, and you should not expect to be protected if something goes wrong.
Hey, this is Dan Bova, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I speak with people who are doing incredible things, who are smarter, more talented, and cooler than I am, which is honestly a pretty low bar, but whatever. So we are recording this on November 4th, 2024. That's right, the day before the big election. Now, by the time this episode drops, we'll know who won, hopefully. In terms of polling, it's insanely tight. Experts are predicting lots of legal battles, chaos, all that fun stuff. So we thought it'd be a great time to talk with today's guest. Sarah Knight is the foul-mouthed self-help guru we all need. Her TEDx talk, The Magic of Not Giving a Fuck, has 10 million views. She's written several books, and these no fucks given guides have sold millions of copies and have been published in more than 30 languages. So I want to find out how to say fuck in at least five of those languages. But more importantly, I want to learn what advice we could take away from her bestseller, Calm the Fuck Down. I think we probably all need a little of that. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much. That was quite an introduction.
Well, great to talk to you. I mean, things are tense. And if the polls are correct, 50% of people listening to this are happy and 50% are not right now. And things have been tense for so long. So, Sarah, how do we calm the fuck down?
I'm so glad you asked. You know, I should let everybody listening know that I am as anxious as any of you. And it's not just about the election. I am anxious because I'm moving. I am anxious because we've had some deaths in the family recently. I'm anxious because I live in the Dominican Republic, actually, which is in the middle of rainy season, and it is historic levels of rain. So I'm anxious about my house flooding. There's all kinds of things going on. So whenever anybody is listening to this interview, I hope that they can take away some of these tips that aren't necessarily solely related to the election. But I will tell you that the first question to ask yourself in times of great anxiety is the one question to rule them all, which is, can I control it? And if the answer is no, you have to let it go. And believe me, I understand that that is easier said than done, but it's actually kind of a simple calculation. And that's something I am happy to talk to you about today, which is how do I personally let it go? And how can you let it go?
Yeah, I think we could all use that, because depending on who you are, I know me, so I'll use me as an example. You know, like, I'm not the type of person who's going to confront somebody for thinking differently than I do, but I will argue with them incessantly in my head for hours on end. And it drives me crazy where I'm literally telling myself to shut up, but I can't. And sometimes I feel like I'm almost like too empathetic. And I want to understand how this person could possibly think this. And my brain is just going in circles. So if that resonates, if you have a solution to that, please share it.
Okay, well, I have been there. And there are a few things that I like to call sleight of mind. Okay, so putting aside this idea that you say, can I control it? And you can't. You can't control somebody else's opinion, right? And you're probably not going to change their opinion. And it's probably a waste of your time and energy to attempt to do so. But you've still got your brain on, hyper mode, having those conversations. And so if you can momentarily, sometimes longer than momentarily, trick your brain into stopping thinking about those things by doing something else, I call this giving anxiety the finger. And really what it means is doing something hands-on. So I mentioned I live in the tropics, which means I have a very verdant garden, especially right now in rainy season. I have been known to go out there with my little shears and just kind of like Mr. Miyagi, these papyrus bushes in my yard. I mean, almost just like attacking them, making sculptures. It's like an Edward Scissorhands situation out there. And what that does is it gives me a physical focus. I'm working with my hands. I'm blurring out all of the other stuff that I'm thinking about. In fact, I can't be having fights with, certain folks in my heads because otherwise I might cut off a finger. So when I say give anxiety the finger, I'm saying really work on something with your hands. For my husband, it's restringing his guitar. Somebody else might be whittling a little cute little woodland creature out of a piece of driftwood. But that is one thing. That is one quick tip. And like I said, I call it sleight of mind because you're really tricking yourself for as long as you can to get out of that cycle of intrusive thoughts.
I love that. That's great. Please keep going.
Another one is work it out. And I am the least interested person you've ever met in working out. I do not like physical activity. I don't like lifting heavy things. But there is a reason that they call serotonin the happiness hormone. And it can be put on blast by physical activity. So maybe you don't want to go to the gym. I don't want to go to the gym. But do you want to do cartwheels in your yard? Perhaps you do. Maybe you want to jump up and down and scream into the void. This is also fine. There are lots of ways to get your heart rate going, get that physical activity going, and pump that serotonin through your veins. And you have it. It exists in your body. And so why not use it? So again, like I said, I'm not one of those people who says, go out there and work out and get on your Peloton and go do your CrossFit. But like, if your boss makes you mad, running up and down the stairwell until you no longer want to stab them in the eye with their tie pin is a great way to just get that stress and anxiety out of you, or at least lower it down. My doctor would call it down regulating, for a period of time. And a lot of times physical activity can just be a, walk on the beach. It can be touching grass. And that really helps. And I say that again, as somebody who does not like physical activity. And then one more quick tip before we move on is just, again, for this sleight of mind, there's something I talk about in my book, Calm the Fuck Down, which is ostrich mode, okay? So you've got anxiety, you've got anger, you've got sadness, and then you've got avoidance. And a lot of us fall into a cycle of avoidance when there are a lot of stressors piling up, we're feeling anxious about it, and we just don't know what to do with ourselves. I think that's happening now, like you said, in the 24 hours leading up to polls closing, but also just in general in your life. And so if you are someone like my mother or my editor who finds themselves in ostrich mode more often than not, I suggest that you make a trade and you tell yourself, I am allowed to keep avoiding one thing as long as I take action on the other thing. I am allowed to avoid calling my insurance company to dispute this charge because I don't feel like being on the phone with them and getting really angry for the next 3 hours.
Right.
But I have to go out there and clean off the pump that's been, I'm having trouble with my plumbing right now. Like one of those things has to go. So,
right.
So when you're trying to get rid of those intrusive thoughts, stop having those conversations and fights with people in your head, you can do something with your hands. You can focus on something physical. You can pump that serotonin through your body, or you can at least say, all right, I'm going to take my head out of the sand and I'm going to take one action towards something I can control? And that, again, it takes it all back to that one question to rule them all. Can I control it? If the answer is no, let it go. Giving you some tips for how you can let that go. But if you can control something, then do it for the love of God, you know? And yeah. I call this productive, helpful, effective worrying. So that acronym for anybody who's just catching up is phew. And what that means is, hey, I'm not able to stop worrying. I'm not able to just magically get rid of the stress. I mean, the last thing anybody who's freaking out wants to be told is calm the fuck down. I get that. But the book has sold 250,000 copies. So I'm on to something. And so if you can channel that energy into accomplishing a goal, making a change, making some progress that you can control, you will, I promise, you will feel better. I promise.
Why is Mathnasium one of the world's fastest growing franchises? Because demand for after-school math help is skyrocketing, making it an exceptional financial opportunity with the power to change lives. That's also why Mathnasium is consistently recognized as the number one math-only education franchise. With over 1,100 centers worldwide, Mathnasium is the trusted brand in math education, helping students build confidence and develop a love for math. Protected territories are available. Get your free franchise information kit at mathnasiumfranchise.com. That's mathnasiumfranchise.com. So why is that something, I mean, I think we know that in our core, like this thing isn't going to happen unless I do it, but man, I just don't want to do it. And beyond like procrastination, you know, I find myself telling my kids this who are in high school and college, like just do the thing and then it'll be over and then you can move on with your life. Like how have you managed? I mean, you've written many books, you've given many talks. I'm going to assume, I could be wrong, that you didn't every day wake up and jump on your keyboard and start happily typing away. Like, how do you kind of push yourself over the edge sometimes when you've got maybe a deadline looming and you've just got to do this thing?
So I am never happily typing away. I am always very stressfully typing away. I do put my butt in the seat. I mean, I do think that that's a really important thing to do. And writing advice aside, you know, just life advice, I put my butt in the seat. I set myself up for success by acknowledging that I have to make some progress on any given day. You know, every once in a while I have a duvet day where I just stay in bed, and that's fine. We all need to relax. But, you know, people ask me when I wrote this book, this was my fourth book in the No Fucks Given Guide series. And people had been asking me, you know, how do you just kind of get in this mindset of, I'm just going to get it done. I'm just going to do what I can control. And it's because I've always been ruled by logic and reasoning. I've always been comforted by the idea that if I can accomplish something, if I can be productive, like that to me is very calming. Mm. And so I really try to take the emotion out of it, whatever it is that I'm trying to do. I'm not thinking about who's going to like my books. You know, are they going to sell well? Is my editor mad at me? Like, I'm just focused on the logic of, did I put 500 words on the page today? Right. Or did I not? And then calm the fuck down. I call this creating your emotional puppies. We have emotions. Emotions are good, right? You know, emotions are healthy. You got to feel the feels to get past whatever it is. But much like puppies, who are also great a lot of the time, you can't get anything done with them running around, just wreaking havoc, you know, knocking things over, chewing on your furniture, peeing on your mother-in-law's rug. So you have to sit there and go, I'm feeling out of control. I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling stressed out. I'm feeling like I'm never going to get this mountain of work done. And you have to acknowledge that and then to take those emotions and just, and I don't know anything really about actually creating dogs. So I hope people who are animal lovers don't come at you to be like, this woman, she doesn't know you can't create a puppy. Just as a metaphor, take those emotions. This is what I do. And I lock them away in this little crate in the back of my head. And I go, all right, it's time to get the work done now, you know, and I let them run around, I let them tire themselves out, and then I put them away.
That's great.
And I think, you know, that's just, again, it's how I cope. It's just this idea of like, you know, can I control it? Yes or no. You have to accept the things you can't control. That doesn't mean being happy about them. That doesn't mean being told that they're not a big deal. It doesn't mean ignoring the, you know, the trauma that they have caused you or the difficulty they have caused you. But you have to accept reality so that you can move on to, like I said, make progress, make change, fix things, fix the bad things that have already happened. You know, you can't do any of that without accepting the reality of your situation. And I do think that emotions can get in the way of that. So I like to just put them in a crate and then they can come back out again when I'm ready to deal with them.
So I'd love to talk to you quickly about the emotion that you didn't put in a crate, which I'm assuming when you decided, you know what, I don't like being a book editor anymore, living in a shoebox in New York City. I'm out of here. Can you talk a little bit about that decision? Because that's a pretty big decision.
Yeah, I will say very honestly, I came to it out of desperation. I had been living in New York for 15 years. I had been climbing the corporate ladder in book publishing. I had gotten very far. I was a senior editor at Simon & Schuster in my last job in New York. I had a lot of best-selling authors, fiction, nonfiction, on paper, very successful. In my brain, not so much. And it wasn't really that I didn't want to be a book editor anymore. It was that after a long time of panic and anxiety and depression and all of these things creeping in and burnout, I realized I couldn't work for a corporation anymore. I'm just not the kind of person who can show up and sit in a meeting and eat shit and not say anything about it, you know? And I just, I couldn't hope. Well, I guess we've already said the F word, so that's okay for me to say here. But like, I just realized that that was the thing. That was the root cause of what was just driving me crazy. But I did not realize that until I sat down and allowed myself to say, what is going on with me? Why do I feel this way? Why do I feel like a cornered cat? You know, why am I having all of these physical manifestations? And when I talk about anxiety, I have been diagnosed with generalized anxiety and panic disorder. I have medicine that I can take for it if it gets really bad, but I've also learned a whole lot in the last now going on 20 years about how to, you know, how to change my mindset and how to do things, like I said, physically, naked cartwheels through the lawn. But I have a walled-in garden. Nobody can see that. you know, to give myself a leg up. And so when I made this realization and I talked to my husband about it, and I said, I just think I have to quit my job. I think that's it. And my job had defined me, my success, my ambition, my type A personality, that ladder that I had climbed, you know, and climbing it faster than a lot of people, all of that defined who I was. And so I did spend, you know, a fair amount of time while I was both psychologically getting ready to quit and financially saving up to quit. It took me a year, full year, 365 days of moving a little money from my checking account into my savings account every morning before I went to work, putting a little sticker on my fridge and really working up to being able to leave that job. And I, you know, I used a lot of these different coping mechanisms throughout, and they all kind of came out many years later when I wrote Calm the Fuck Down, because I had finally had the distance and the, you know, relative mental health to kind of look at it all and synthesize it and say, oh, okay. And if I could do this, and I was desperate, I was having panic attacks. I passed out in a Brooklyn deli and I almost took down a Pringles display.
Wow.
You know, but instead I landed on my face. I was having all of these terrible problems. God. And I worked it out. And if I could work it out, then I feel that anybody can work it out. And hopefully I'm making it a little bit easier for them with these books and these interviews, you know, giving them some steps to take.
We certainly appreciate it. And I'm just curious too, like, you know, obviously some great titles you came up with, and your outlook is very bold and very refreshing and very honest. Do you remember, were you tying with sort of like toned down versions of that when you were writing your first book, or you were like, this is what it's going to be?
I was channeling. So I wrote my first book about a couple of months after I left my job. So as I said, I'd been I'd been freaking out for a few years. I'd been preparing for 1 year. I left my job in June of 2015. I had the idea for the life-changing magic of not giving a fuck right around then. I had the Marie Kondo book that it was originally supposed to be a parody of, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, sitting on my coffee table, and I read it. I thought, you know, I'm doing everything she's doing for your garage and your kids' playroom, except I'm doing it for the inside of your head. This would be a fun book. And I got it all out there, and I have to say it was definitely channeling a lot of the pent-up, attitude that I had not been able to channel in various boardrooms and meetings for the last 15 years. And I just did it, and I was like, this is who I am. This is what I want to say. If a publisher wants to publish it and people want to read it, then great. And it was one of the most liberating things I had ever done for myself, you know, because I'm, as I said, you know, type A, the valedictorian of my class. I went to Harvard. Like, I'm supposed to be this kind of, you know, mainstream, thoughtful, intellectual, book editor for 15 years. And I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. Fuck it. This is my mission. And that's what I hear from readers all over the world and have been hearing since the first book, is they feel liberated. They feel like somebody is finally giving them permission to say and do the things they've wanted to say and do, and they've thought that were right for them, but society has been holding them back from. In case anybody's listening and thinks that I'm, you know, promoting just kind of everybody not giving a fuck and becoming an asshole and doing whatever they want with no regard for anyone else, up to the contrary, all of my books are about how to do all of this while remaining a good, kind, person who is doing the right thing for themselves and therefore will have more time and energy and money left over in their fuck budget to devote to being a supportive spouse, a good parent, a kind employer, you know, an excitable employee. Like, you have to take care of yourself in order to be able to take care of anybody else. So, you know, especially during stressful times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't tell, like, do you think it was a good decision to quit that corporate job, or maybe you still second thoughts about that? Want to go back?
You can't tell. I moved to a tropical island, quit my job, wrote the first book, moved to the Dominican Republic, haven't looked back.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was really a good decision for myself. It was a good decision for my marriage, for my household, and clearly a good decision for millions of people around the world who have discovered the magic. So
what are some of your favorite ways to say fuck in different languages? Do any of them?
Well, because I now live in a Spanish speaking country, I'm you know, a big fan of some very bad words that I've learned in the calle, in the streets of the DR. I think that my translators around the world have really been doing a great job bringing the message to the people. The Italians, they are not holding back.
Well, Sarah, this has been hugely helpful for me, for sure. I'm going to be doing push-ups and whittling and knitting at the same time as I watch the election results come in. But I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us. And please let everyone know how they could find out all things Sarah Knight going on in the universe.
Well, thank you so much for having me. If you need my little voice on your shoulder anytime between now and, well, and forever, you can find me at sarahknight.com. And I have all of the books are there. The podcast is there. You can sign up for my newsletter, which actually goes out multiple times a month and has all kinds of free tips like the ones that I gave people today. So if you just want a little taste, you can do that. Get on my mailing list. And you can find me on most social media platforms at Sarah Knight Author. I don't do all the platforms anymore because, you guessed it, I don't give a fuck about Twitter. Sarah Knight Author will find me on many of the platforms, and sarahknight.com is where you can find everything else.
Okay, that's the show. So once again, a big thank you to Sarah Knight, and thank you for listening. You know what? Why don't you go thank yourself? Lots more fun shows on the way, so please subscribe and rate us, and check out Entrepreneur's YouTube channel where you can see this show, this episode, and others like it, and all kinds of other great stuff. See you soon. Why is Mathnasium one of the world's fastest growing franchises? Because demand for after-school math help is skyrocketing, making it an exceptional financial opportunity with the power to change lives. That's also why Mathnasium is consistently recognized as the number one math-only education franchise. With over 1,100 centers worldwide, Mathnasium is the trusted brand in math education, helping students build confidence and develop a love for math. Protected territories are available. Get your free franchise information kit at mathnasiumfranchise.com. That's mathnasiumfranchise.com.